Hey everybody, and welcome to the Blind Ambition with Jack Kelly. It's your friend Rick from Blind here, and I have the great privilege of introducing you all to Donna Helfrey. Donna is the Vice President of Talent at Go One, so she's responsible for developing and implementing the company's culture and talent strategy on a worldwide basis. Go One makes it easy for organizations to learn. The company creates content from top learning providers to deliver education and training across all industries and topics. And for folks who might not be familiar, Go One has raised over $400 million to date. Its last round was more than $100 million in June 2022, and its last public valuation is more than $2 billion, so a double unicorn there. Thanks for coming on the show, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
So I was particularly impressed with your background. And so, you know, our audience is not as familiar, so I want to kind of take that step back to begin with. Can you walk us through your career and how do you decided on recruiting and talent acquisition?
Sure. I'm happy to. So I don't know that it's a real glamorous story, but it is mine. So happy to share. Right out of college, I thought I wanted to be an event planner. And, you know, I was like, oh, this is going to be really fun. I want to plan parties. I want to be in the details, be in the scene and stuff like that. So I got a job doing just that. And my day would start at 6:30 in the morning, wouldn't end till about 11 o'clock at night. Once I did the math, I probably made $6 an hour. And I just was like, what am I doing? So I'd done it for a couple months. And, you know, this was in the 90s and there was another Donna there. So she was called Donna and I was called Puppy. And I was like, weird. And so after about 2 months, I went into the boss's office and he said, you know, Puppy, what's happening? You know, and I was like, no can do. Like, this is not for me. And he's like, give me one more month. I'll take you to New York. I'll take you here and all these things. And, you know, as the low man on the totem pole, one of my jobs was to guard the ballroom, okay, at one of the events and make sure no one came in. And I'm like, I'm 23 years old. What am I going to do? Throw these people over my shoulder? Like that's just not going to work. And then another chore of mine was to go to the airport at O'Hare. I'm in Chicago and drive somebody to every terminal. And they went out with the sign to pick up the VIP people. And I was like, yeah, I don't think this is for me. So anyway, shortly after I went to a staffing firm and I said, you know, I with the intention that they would find me work. And I was like, I had an apartment that I was moving into for the first time with girlfriends in the city. And I was like, I need a job. And I was like, I'm not too proud to answer phones or whatever it is you need me to do. And they said, do you want to work here? And I was like, sure. Wow. So the company at the time was called Richard Michael Group, and it was in the late 90s, and they were acquired by Randstad. So it's a global staffing firm. So I worked there for about 3.5 years, and there was a kind of a time in that early stage where I was like, I don't know, maybe I want to be a high school guidance counselor. And so I had done the legwork to enroll in DePaul. And I was like, wait a minute, all these classes are at night. Because in my mind, I was like, I'd go to school during the day, I'd wait tables at night, make money, this and that. And so, you know, after doing some finances, I'm like, I'm going to be $40,000 in debt to maybe make $40,000. And a couple had just started a staffing firm in downtown Chicago, and they had one client, which was the Wrigley Company, and no employees. And I got connected to them and they're like, I know who you should talk to. And I was their first employee. So then I went there and that was a company called Northbridge Staffing Group. I was there for about 8 years and that was incredible. Again, working for a couple, it gave me a really good foundation into recruiting because, you know, there essentially would be a home for everybody, but not everybody in the, you know, like you worked with all these different clients. So maybe the person that KPMG was looking for isn't the same person that the American Dental Association is working for. And when you're, I think I was 26 and not knowing, you know, a lot of stuff about industries and stuff, it gave you a really good breadth of knowledge of, you know, corporate America, nonprofits, all those things. But you were also compensated by your work. So like you had to hustle and, you know, get these candidates to the people the fastest, and they had to be the best because it was a commission environment and that's how you got paid. So I was able to hire, I think we got up to 15 employees at one point. Sales, I don't even remember, but definitely in the millions for a small company. So it just was a really incredible training ground. But also Randstad was too, because it was like a classroom setting of, you know, several months of like, here, this is what you're going to do. And if you survive, great. And most people didn't make it out of the training. And this was at the time, I mean, we didn't have internet. So I was cold calling out of a phone book and I had to write down every call I made, 150 a day, document it. And every time I hung up the phone, my boss would criticize how the call went. And I was like, ugh, you know, and looking back, I was like, wow, that was the best thing that's ever happened to me. Cause I don't think people do that anymore. You know, you're not going to criticize everything they do and you're not sitting in an office. We had to wear suits and I mean, it was wild. So again, it was a really good foundation. So after 8 years at Northbridge, I got to a point where I was like, I need to start doing things I'm afraid of. You know, this is a great job, great company. They treat me really well, but everybody was just like me. It was all young white girls, besides the couple, you know, the husband and wife. And there was, you know, 15 of us. And then, you know, at some point there was maybe 9 of us. And I was like, I don't know. I want to work with people that aren't just like me. And, you know, I approached my boss because I'd been there a long time, first employee. And I said, it's about time, you know, to phase me out. So we had, you know, really healthy dialogue. And he's like, you know, go for it, like start interviewing. And, you know, he kind of was like, go see if the grass was greener. And at the time, you know, I didn't find anything right away. And Groupon had approached me about a position. And I was like, that's probably not the right job for me. And that was in June of 2010. And then in August, they came back and said, by the way, the director of recruiting is going to take on a role for in HR. Do you want this job? And I was like, yes. So I went there and they had a pretty solid team at the time. There was only like 400 employees at Groupon, but there was already 7 recruiters. And, you know, we were tasked with, I think at one point, I put in there, I know I've hired 1,800 people in a year and all that crazy stuff. So anyway, went to Groupon, great, great, great experience. You know, I was in a position where maybe on paper, I wasn't really qualified to do, you know, I'd never even worked in-house before, you know, but somebody gave me a chance and trusted me to say, hey, she can figure it out. I didn't work for a global company, you know, but with anything, you're going to stretch yourself. And Groupon was notorious for, you know, that you're going to get hired and you might be, you know, knowledgeable for A through L, but you're required to do A through Z, you know? And so like building a team underneath you of really, really good people. So it takes a village. I didn't single-handedly do this myself. Then this past February, it was President's Day. You know, Groupon been going through some changes and we had gotten a new CEO the previous winter in December. And, you know, they were in this trying to reinvent themselves several times. And I'm like, I've been here for almost 12 years. Maybe it's time. And my boss was like, I got to go. And I said, you know, listen, you just took the guilt off the table. I'm right behind you, but I would do this job with you anywhere, you know, that you are. I just adored working for her, adored the team, those types of things. But writing was on the wall that, you know, it was probably a good time I started exploring other things. And this opportunity presented itself. And, you know, I had never heard of Go One, which was a really natural, and still to this day, as I interview people, they're like, no, what's that? And so it was one, I wasn't sure what Go One was. And secondly, I was like, my day can't start at 5 p.m. And so my boss was like, understood. And this was communicating through the exec search firm. And she's like, just have her talk to us. And, you know, obviously each conversation was better than the next. And here we are. So it was something that, you know, the non-negotiables for me in a job have always been like the people and the product. If I'm going to be the face of this and encourage people to leave their jobs and join me here and join us, then I have to wholeheartedly get behind it. And it definitely checked all those boxes.
Donna, you know, it's so interesting. I don't know if you're aware of this. You probably are. But when you went there and interviewed at the first recruiting firm and they wanted to hire you, that's how I got hired. And that's how so many other people got hired. It's a thing where you go there, you know, you go to the staffing agency back probably same time as you did. And, you know, you're not sure what to do. And they're like, hey, you know, you would make a good recruiter. Would you like to join us? And I hear that story, Donna, so often now. I don't know if they would like do that for everybody or if they thought like anybody had some sales experience, you know, a little salesy, a little schmoozy, you know, the gift of gab. You immediately like, wait, we'll take them. We'll take the person.
It is funny because most people, I've only met one person that said that, oh, they went to college and knew they wanted to be a recruiter. And, you know, she's a little younger, so maybe it was more of a hipper career as it got, you know, further on. But I didn't even know what it was. I was like, okay, you want me to cold call? Okay. You know, and it was just one of those things where I was flattered and I had a job and I was, you know, able to pay the bills and call it a day. And so you do kind of just fall into it.
It is. It's one of those things. It's not like when you're a kid, you know, I want to be an astronaut. I want to be a fireman. I want to be a recruiter. You know, that the last one, no, it's not usually what goes on. That's not part of the conversation.
Yeah. So I've been really fortunate for, you know, people taking a chance on me and, you know, it's all worked out and, you know, I'm thrilled to be here, but I also have a lot of gratitude of where I came from. You know, I didn't leave either all three of them. And I literally had three jobs. You know, as Ron said, I was there for 3.5 years at Northbridge 8 and Groupon 12. Like people are like, wow, you're a lifer. And I was like, you treat me right. And I do what I need to do. Then, you know, we're going to be in this for the long haul, you know? But yeah, I have a lot of gratitude for the experiences that got me here.
So Donna, how was, if you don't mind asking, for like from Groupon, because it was one of those companies that to me from the outside perspective came from out of nowhere, just blew up, like everybody heard of it. And then I don't know, then all of a sudden kind of you don't really hear too much about it. What was it like working there? Were you at the early, I know you said about 400 people, but was that like early on? Like
yeah, so Groupon started in 2008 and I got there in 2010.
Wow. Okay. Right in the financial crisis, right? Probably right. And the worst time.
Then we went public in 2011 and we went public in November of 2011. And then all of a sudden in like January or shortly after 2012, we were in 37 countries and we had 17,000 people.
Wow. Okay.
So I don't know anyone that could do that well. That is pretty sloppy. And I remember, you know, the head of HR was fantastic and we were really close and, you know, just finding out, like, we don't even know who's on the payroll in Brazil, except on a spreadsheet, you know? So there was all this like massive undertaking of getting us on the same, you know, HCM and systems and processes and procedures. And the term one playbook plays back in my head that you're like, oh boy. So I think the early stages of Groupon though were so exciting because again, you got really excited about a coupon. And so you had two things. You had the surprise and delight of what that deal was going to be because you only got one deal of the day. And then the second thing was there's the sense of urgency because you had, you know, 24 hours for the deal or it goes away. And then there was that tipping point. Remember, you would tell merchants like, hey, enough customers have to buy this. I'm going to guarantee you, you know, 5,000 customers. And in some places it would sell out like 25,000 customers, you know? So it was, you know, in the 2010, 2011 freak of nature because everybody was excited about it. But then what happened was there was a zillion copycats So even if you're not using a Groupon, some people still say Groupon, you know, like Coke to mean pop. You know, so it was this household term, but then there was, you know, all these copycats like Retail Me Not, Gilt, you know, coupons.com, everything. Okay. So being on the inside, you know, it was, again, how do we reinvent ourselves? How do we get into these different verticals that other people aren't doing? Okay. And I could name off 30 that, you know, successful or not. I mean, some of them were crazy. And from being on the recruiting side, it was like, hurry up, Donna, I need 300 people for Groupon now, and they need to be staffed in 2 weeks. And I was like, okay.
Well, how do you do that? Like, how do you get, were they full-time permanent or, you know? Well,
yeah, they were. And so we did use some agency help for a lot of things, especially like our customer service and things like that. But what was really cool, again, in the early stages of Groupon is we had a pretty awesome office environment in downtown Chicago, right on the river. And, you know, let's say for customer service, we needed a couple hundred people, but they wanted them from like the improv scene. They wanted these people to have this voice that, you know, this voice of the customer came across as really cheeky and fun and quirky and all that stuff. And so that to me was awesome because I'm like, these people are dying for benefits and some steady work and they can moonlight, you know, on the side and do their acting and do all that stuff. Okay. So that part was easy, but when you're going to get more specific criteria, again, as a public company, you need to build out a finance team. You need to build out treasury, tax, audit. I mean, like it's very different, you know? And so at one point my team probably got up to about 30 people. And again, so I would verticalize them into specialties like, hey, you support marketing, you too support finance, you support engineering and that type of thing. So you're going to have specialty areas, but again, 300 people in 3 weeks is not feasible. And, you know, what we did at the time, we were on a system called JobVite, which was our ATS. And I literally sent mass communication to everybody that had applied in our system saying, hey, we're hosting this job fair. These are the roles, these are the pay, this and that. Sign up at this time, we'll see you then. So it was job fair around the clock for, not around the clock, we did sleep. But again, in the early days of Groupon though, I worked almost every Saturday because we had to hire so many people and there wasn't the logistics or time during the workday with the hiring managers, with even office space available to interview these people. So we would host these basically interview career job fairs, you know, every Saturday till we got staffed up to where we needed to be. But people were like wanting to do it, you know, like it was, again, like the sexy thing in Chicago, like the first like tech company and stuff like that. So the verticals did get a little crazy because, you know, some of them were a huge miss. I mean, we got into food and delivery. You guys probably have never even heard of this. And it was called Order Up. Okay. And so we're competing with like the Grubhubs and the DoorDash. And then you get to a point where you're like, well, there's actually companies out there that do this and do it really well. And we're not one of them. But, you know, for me, it's a little heartbreaking because one of the reasons I'm in the recruiting side of the house and not necessarily the HR policy police side of the house is I love the build. I love finding people careers. And when all of a sudden, you know, that doesn't work out and these people no longer have a job, you know, I'm like, you know, so I saw that play out a lot of times. And so, again, with all the copycats and things that didn't work out, I also think we went public way too quickly. We expanded by global acquisition way too quickly. And then, you know, when you're rearranging the chairs of leadership and somebody's trying to catch up and all those things, and I probably was the most stable of, you know, so I saw all this churn, you know, but I also saw a lot of success. So there's definitely some good, some bad, but again, from a hiring standpoint, there was a variety of things that we needed to do to put in place. Like I have this Groupon Global Talent Acquisition Behavioral Interview Guide. So what was cool is, you know, my team was like, I'm like, why don't we build something? This doesn't exist. You know, these hiring managers are going into these interviews kind of blind and they don't even know what to ask these people, you know? So let's figure out what are our habits? What are our values? What are our, you know, our must have, like ownership and performance. Here's the questions, and here's what good looks like. Here's what mixed looks like. Here's what poor looks like, you know, so really guiding them through that. And we were able to, you know, create in-person trainings. Those went on for about, you know, we did them quarterly, you know, 90 minutes. We would record them for people that couldn't attend. And they had like a short, you know, like, hey, what is it I do? Because I think there's a real misconception that anyone interviewing wants the job. You know, so hiring managers think that like, oh no, they want this job, or they want to talk to me, or any job I post, it will be like, hey, and culturally, like for me, how are we making sure we have a diverse pipeline? Gender, you know, how do I make sure I've got some females in the mix? How do I make sure I've got some ethnic diversity? And it's hot, but it's easier said than done. You know, like I don't have access to, you know, their personal details when I'm looking at a resume in an ATS, but it's taking, you know, hey, all these phone calls, all these Zoom screens to make sure that I've narrowed down the funnel to get them a great slate of candidates. And again, teaching the recruiters that have worked with me and under me, and I still am a hands-on recruiter. I'm at Go One now, still doing roles. Like I have 3 active recs myself. So I'm doing the work alongside them. So it isn't like I'm like, oh, this is what you need to do. And, you know, like giving them guidance and not knowing that it is hard, you know, because again, you're making, you know, assessments and judgments off of people's life decisions. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of variety of ways it could get done. But I think adding some structure around, you know, again, what I mentioned before, the build versus the buy, like, hey, what are some non-negotiables that these people must have? And I think in areas like engineering, areas like finance, like I can't teach somebody to be a treasurer, you know, or a tax accountant. That's not my wheelhouse, you know? So there's certain things that, you know, it sounds like common sense, but I think if you establish all that criteria, you know, at the kickoff point, and we call them like strategy calls, you know, because we want to make sure that the hiring manager and interview team understands that they have some skin in the game here too. You know, I'm like, these people are working for you, not me, you know? So here's things that you think might be common sense, like, hey, make sure you're on time. Make sure you've looked at their resume. Again, they sound like real basic, you know, just nice to haves, but it's like, sometimes you got to really lead a horse to water to be like, no, okay. So, you know, don't be on your phone and don't be eating, you know, and especially when you're at home, like, hey, if your room's a mess, that's indicative of maybe, you know, like you. So like, let's, and having to guide people that way has been, you know, comical, but, you know, obviously very interesting and more necessary than I thought.
Now it has to be a wild change to where you are now, where you have only 3 recs, you know, in a whole different kind of company, right?
No. I have 3 myself. Yeah. The team works on other things too. So I shouldn't say we only have 3 open jobs, but I have 3 myself. Yeah, I will say the difference. So there's a lot of differences, I think, working for a US-based company than versus a company that's outside of the US. And you're going to have, you know, geographical challenges no matter what. Okay. But I'm used to, you know, when I came from Groupon, I had Europe, India. I did have 1 person in APAC, or one person in Australia. But yeah, that those touch points were a little different. But what's been nice and kind of a breath of fresh air is I wake up in the morning and I, you know, there's going to be a lot of unread Slacks, a lot of unread emails, but they're sleeping. Okay, so it gives me time. I can go to a 6 a.m. yoga class. I can come home, shower, grab my coffee, get in my Zen space here, and really be present for like, okay, what's priority? What do I need to respond to? That type of thing. We're here, you know, somebody has access to you at all times, you know, and I felt like there was a bit of a shock collar, like, oh, if I didn't respond quick enough, I also got a text, I got a ping and an email. You know, and I'm like, all right, everybody just take a breath. And so that's been a welcome change. But again, figuring out different means of communications, like, educate, communicate, socialize, all those things multiple times, because you, again, don't have the luxury of being awake at the same time when things happen. So that's been, you know, a little bit different, but I think, again, this is a smaller scale, but the difference here is, you know, we're hiring, you know, some in the US, hiring some in Europe, but it's a household name in Australia, not in the States. So really educating people, hey, this is what Go One does. And I think the mission driven and purpose, I mean, our goal is to get to 1 billion learners. And in today's world, that really resonates with people. And I think, you know, people understand, like, hey, people, anyone that touches our product is better than they were before. You know, maybe your class is 30 minutes, but you learn something in that class. And, you know, we're meeting learners where they're at, which has been exciting. And I think when I got here, there, again, wasn't real structure or rigor around hiring. And they had one recruiter in Australia trying to hire for all of the US and Europe. And I'm like, Jess, you poor soul, how did you do this? She's like, well, you know, I managed, you know, three different time blocks for these regions. And I was like, that's not setting anybody up for success, you know? And so understanding that, hey, we need people in region to understand the landscape of the hiring market. Hiring in Europe, as you guys probably know, each country has its own nuance, you know, and somebody in Australia doesn't know all that stuff, and they really shouldn't, and try to stay, you know, really on par with what's happening. So I was able to hire, so I've got two people in the US, one person in Dublin, and three people in Australia. So that kind of covers our bases from like a time zone perspective and knowledge sharing of like what needs to happen. Yes, the volume is lower. And I think that was really due to, you know, macroeconomic conditions and making good judgment calls of like, hey, there's a lot of things out of our control. You know, it really doesn't make sense to double headcount at this point when we don't know what's going to happen with the world, you know? So like, let's take the pedal off the gas. Cause when I was hired because there was going to be, you know, huge hiring goals. And we'll get there. We just took a more reasonable, you know, conservative approach so that we don't have to lay off a bunch of people because there's things that are happening that we can't control. And I really had a lot of respect for that.
Now, I'm curious about the hiring aspect. I mean, from a candidate's perspective, you noted how different it is from the recruiter or the employer perspective in terms of how challenging or how different or unique it is for an international company to be hiring across so many geographies and cultures. From a candidate perspective, is there anything that I should know if I'm going to work at a country that, you know, maybe is not founded in that country, maybe it's not in the US, that might be different in the job interview process? Or should I expect kind of a local experience if I'm, you know, a candidate in the US applying for a US job?
Yeah, so good question. I would say depend on the role, okay? For example, I'm in the process of hiring some executive roles. So when half of the executive team is in Australia, you know, you're going to have some time zones that maybe aren't ideal. But what I found with Australia and the people I interact with, they're real early risers. Like they prefer to meet with me at 6 a.m. my time or 6 a.m. their time or 7, which is my 3 p.m. or 4 p.m., which is great. But I'm also on Central Time. So if you're West Coast, you've got a little bit of a buffer. I would say, you know, we definitely have recruiting presence within region. So it's going to be, you know, kind of a standard process. But I think having headquarters in Australia gives you like, I don't know, I thought, to me, it was cool because there's so many things that are like cheeky and like different words and things that they use. I mean, one day there was pictures all over Slack of somebody brought a kangaroo in the office. And I was like, whoa, things I never thought I would see. So like, there's just differences, but I think those differences are very welcomed. I mean, an interview, no matter what, is going to be a conversation, not an interrogation. you know, you want to make sure that, hey, people are comfortable. I want to give them all the detail. And, you know, we're still kind of a startup. I mean, Go One's been around since 2015, in the US since 2018. So we say we're not really a startup. We're more kind of this like awkward teenager, you know, where things are going really well. And we had, you know, we got to here, but how do we get to here? You know, we've hired a lot of leadership in the US. We have a new CFO that's in Las Vegas. Our CMO is in California. Our head of product is also in California. So you'll have this dual leadership in both places. And there's also leadership in Europe. So I think it's very similar to working for any global company that, you know, sometimes people in the US might say, hey, decisions are made while I'm sleeping. And that happened at Groupon all the time. Well, it's like, okay, well, this is kind of the nature of the business and get on board, but you also still have a voice to say like, hey, I've got some concerns, or can we talk about this? A thing that kind of connects us all at Go One is every week, every Friday within region, there's an end of week call. Okay. So it's recorded and it could be, you know, people focus, it could be product focus, it could be marketing focus, it could be, you know, anything. And there's a host within region and you watch it and then you're like, oh, I feel really connected, even though like my team personally, I've only met two of them in real life. So that's different. So how is it that I'm making sure that we still have a human connection and can build a relationship, you know, outside of like, oh, you have all these recs you're working on. I mean, like that stuff is important too. So I think the interview process would be the same. I think, you know, there's more casualness in Australia than there is in the US, but I wouldn't say there's anything that, you know, regionally would be very different.
Do you find some regions or roles more challenging than others to hire in?
Yeah, I mean, US is still a challenge a bit because again, people don't know who we are.
Right.
And once you tell them, then I think people get excited and, you know, it makes the outreach part a little harder because they're not going to, you know, we obviously have LinkedIn and we have our ads posted and things like that, but we're not a household name. So they're not going to seek us out. So having to do a lot more passive sourcing in the US and Europe than we do in Australia. Obviously the job market has changed a bit because there's a lot of really good qualified people open to working and looking for their next opportunity. So I think it's important just to stay really top of mind and networking, and everybody knows somebody good. I think good people know good people. But yeah, I do think like the US brand recognition as well as Europe of Go One is not as great as it is outside or in Australia, I should say.
Now I'm curious because you've kind of seen it all. You've recruited agency in-house, kind of almost every company stage, right? From Groupon startup days to, you know, just right before its IPO. And certainly once it became a public, huge global company, do you have any tips or kind of behind the scenes tricks that you can share about recruiting for the professionals that are listening right now that might be looking for their next role?
Yeah. So I think your LinkedIn network and profile is very important. I think make sure that you're not applying to every role because you're getting a little desperate, especially from our lens on an ATS side. We use Greenhouse. I can see one person and it will say applied to, you know, seven roles. You know, well,
oh, interesting.
Are you qualified for all seven? And at Groupon, we had a much higher velocity of positions. So it would be applied to 28 roles. Well, you know, and from my lens, it's like you're just kind of reaching at anything. And I do think be specific enough to what you're, you know, essentially qualified for, but take some stretches. You know, you don't have to have, you know, especially females, they're more reticent to not, you know, if they don't meet all the requirements, they're not going to apply. I think having a lot of, you know, curiosity of, hey, tell me more, you know, be open to things that maybe, you know, you weren't considering before. Like some people will flat out tell me as I reach out to them, like, oh, you're not headquartered in the US. No, thank you. You know, okay. You know, then this isn't for them. But it'd be interesting if they, you know, would talk to me and say like, oh, what's your concern about that? And right. Here's my experience with that, you know, because again, they're going to think like, I mean, they flat out were like, no way. You know, we're a smaller company. We're probably 650 people. I mean, we did just acquire Blinkist, which is really exciting. And that's 160 additional people. So we're some smaller than maybe some would like, but I do think like do things that maybe you weren't thinking this is my perfect job and good things will come, you know, like, again, my gut reaction when somebody reached out to me about this was like, yeah, no. And then I was like, but why don't I talk to them? And again, I met with Ash, my current boss, and I was like, this works. Like we were able to, you know, be on the same page. And like, to me, again, it's like the people, the product, the sustainability of where are we going to be in 12 months? Where are we going to be in 2 years? And again, like after week one, and they had told me, they're like, hey, we're not going to be hiring as many people as we initially told you. And of course I was like, okay, you know, and then they explained why. And I was like, I love that. I think that is a responsible corporate decision to do, as opposed to going back to the board and saying, you know, yeah, we're going to hire all these people and hope it works out. You know, like I'm not in a position where I want to play chicken with anyone's lives. I mean, like I have a family, I have a daughter, I have a mortgage. I mean, like we're all human here, you know, and let's have them have some psychological safety that they feel good about, like, hey, this is going to be here tomorrow. And that's a hard thing to do right now. So again, I would just say network, use your network, make sure your LinkedIn looks good, make sure there's good content on there of things you've actually owned or accomplished. One thing that does kind of annoy me when I looked at people's LinkedIn profiles and then they just tell me like a definition of the company under, you know, say their job title, you know, in the company, and then they just tell me what the company does. And I was like, well, I could look that up myself. Tell me what you do, you know? So I think that that's an important thing to share with people. Again, be engaged in the process and be your own hype person. Like, why is it that I need you? And I'm going to make them comfortable. We're going to have some good dialogue, and then I'm going to get to the meat and substance of that. And so I think, again, just be prepared with like some depth, as opposed to some high level of like, yeah, I worked here. What did you own? What are some things that you can put as your, you know, superpowers or your badge of honor of these are the things that I've done?
No, I find it interesting that advice about just as a candidate, being open about kind of your non-negotiables and different things that, you know, you might say like, hey, I don't want to work for a non-US based company because I don't want to deal with time zones. And a job candidate might think that, you know, it might disqualify them from a job, or, you know, they might be nervous to like bring these up in the first place. But I love that advice about saying, no, just have like a human conversation and maybe we could find a workaround, or maybe we can kind of even find an exemption, right?
Right. Like I'm in a situation now where somebody candidly said to me like, hey, I am a single parent and I can only travel on the weeks I don't have my kid, you know, divorced or whatever. And I was like, okay, but let's, you know, she goes, I want to be very transparent about that. And I said, I think that's fantastic. You know, I'm going to share that information. And I think there is a workaround. You know, like that's not a deal breaker. And like, again, you got to be upfront with some of those things and say, this is some things that I can, you know, negotiate on. And these are some things that I can't, you know, in my lens from working from an Australia company, like I've never worked on a Sunday. And again, when I was going through the process, I kind of was like, am I going to have to, you know, and that's a real thing. Cause like, Sunday night, it's their Monday morning, you know, and to this day I haven't. And there are times where I'll respond to certain things. And my boss is like, it's Sunday night. The work will be there tomorrow. And I'm like, I know, you know, so making sure that, again, you have those boundaries and the company that you work with and for also support that.
That makes a lot of sense. I think a lot of job seekers are surprised about what they can negotiate and ask for. Like my favorite example is there was a company that I work with, but they had just moved offices to a part of town that was completely new development, didn't have public transportation. You know, our first 4 months of that new office, there wasn't even a sidewalk in front of the building. It was that new. Mm-hmm. And I don't drive. You know, I've been a city boy my entire life.
Yeah.
And I asked the recruiter, hey, this sounds really foolish and this is a great opportunity. Love the offer, but I don't drive. And so it's going to be really difficult for me to get to the office. And you've been telling me about how great parking is, but I don't have a car, right? So it's kind of irrelevant. What can you do? The public transportation isn't that great. And we negotiated a Lyft stipend where, you know, every single month they were like, just take Lyft to and from work. We'll pay for everything. You'll have a company car, no questions asked. And wow, it was this unique kind of fabulous benefit that I think I would have never, you know, I certainly wouldn't have known to ask for it. But sure, just by being honest and starting that conversation, the recruiter and the executive said, it'd be a dumb reason for us to lose a candidate if they couldn't get to the office, right? They literally couldn't get to work.
Right.
What's a few hundred dollars a month?
Absolutely. And even like companies that are open now on, you know, this hybrid work environment or, you know, remotes, or again, the amount of money you're saving in gas and parking and buying lunch and all that stuff, like that's significant, you know? And you might be like, hey, this is going to be a great job. I might have to take a little less salary or something, or like, hey, I've got all this unvested stock. Well, okay, walk away from it because I think my quality of life is going to get a little better, you know? So just kind of thinking through like those things, I think that that's another good place to start.
Oh, I love it. And I mean, I do have one kind of question that I'm going to take advantage of my time with kind of a high-level talent executive. You know, our community is fascinated by the incentive structures of recruiters. You know, you've mentioned if you're at an agency, it's very commissioned and sales-based. You're always hustling. It's a rush. You know, what is a recruiter's typical goal or OKR or KPI? Does it differ between if someone's, you know, agency or in-house? You know, if I'm a job seeker, should I get more excited that there's a outside recruiter because maybe they'll hustle more for me? Or, you know, is it great that like I'm speaking with the head of recruiting at the actual company itself?
So I've got two things to say on that.
And okay. Let's
talk about the commission is obviously going to be different, but I think, again, the world is different. So there used to be, you know, like these metrics, like you needed to hire, you know, at Groupon, we'd be like, hey, a corporate recruiter can hire 2 to 3 people a month. A sales recruiter would hire between 5 to 7 a month. And that's a lot. That's pretty high volume. And then a tech recruiter about 1 or 2. Okay, well, when they don't have the role, the recs, that's not on them, that they're not meeting these goals, you know? And so, again, the world has changed a little bit. So like the metrics I care about from an in-house recruiter are going to be candidate satisfaction, and they do get surveys and I measure that, hiring manager satisfaction, you know, time to fill. And again, there's going to be some data that doesn't always tell the whole story, as well as, you know, again, like how are we getting some, you know, diversity into the pipeline? That's important, but there's no points or, you know, you're not getting paid for that in an in-house company. So an in-house, you're going to get a base salary, and both at Groupon and GoOne, there is a bonus, and it's made up of business component, company component, as well as a personal component. So that personal component is going to be like, how is it you show up? You know, and like, again, I'm going to get feedback from everybody you touch. You know, is it your hiring managers? Is it the candidates? Is it your peers? You know, are we really good partners to the comp team? You know, do we work with HR really well? Like, we're all on one team. Like, this isn't us versus them. So I want to make sure, like, are you raising your hand? Like, this sounds silly, but I'm a big, like, show your face on Zoom, you know, and there's going to be times you don't feel like it. And I get that. And just be like, hey, I've had a day, but if you're going to be remote, like, get engaged. Don't just like have your camera off, not say anything, and be like, okay, well, I've done that meeting, you know? And again, in this remote environment where you don't have the luxury of building that, you know, network and all that stuff and the drive-bys or whatever. So in-house, you're going to be, you know, evaluated differently. In the agency side, again, it's been a while. I had a revenue goal I needed to hit. So it was like a sales job per se. And there's, again, a lot of incentive and you got really excited to be like, oh my God, I just filled that placement. So let's say the placement was an average placement is a 20, now it's 30 or 33%. But back in the day, and I didn't do like real executive search, it was 20%. The fee was 20% of the person's salary, first year cash. Okay. And then the recruiter got, I think 15% of the 20% or something, whatever. It was fairly lucrative, but, and then you filled the job. You had this like, oh yes, off my plate. We're done with that, you know? And then you moved on to something new where as an in-house recruiter, well, you have a sales team of 700 people, not at Go One, but let's say a Groupon. That role doesn't ever go away. You're always going to be hiring. And you're kind of like, oh, I'm still having this conversation, you know, whereas in an agency person, you get, you know, these recs, you fill the job and, you know, you've moved on to another company. So I think there's a, like, I took a significant pay cut leaving agency side to go to Groupon, but then there's upside and you build your way up and it all pays off. But I needed to do that in order to get an in-house, you know, to say like, hey, I'll take this, you know, I won't get commission. That's okay. But I know that there's, you know, bonus incentives and stock incentives. And if I do well, I'm going to have a career that, you know, could eventually be pretty, you know, upward and, you know, could be to the rights and, you know, linear in different ways. So yeah, there are very lucrative recruiting opportunities, especially in the exec search world. But when you had said, oh, I'm talking to an exec search, they're going to hustle more for me, I can sell this better than they can. Wow. I'm like, you know, I do work with a lot of agencies and I've got really good partnerships with people that, again, have great networks and I trust that are going to get good people for me, not just throw bodies at me. And there's going to be people I can't find. I'm, you know, humble enough to say, like, they do good work and they have big sourcing teams and all this stuff. And, you know, right now I'm one person, you know, trying to do multiple things, the sourcing, the scheduling and all this stuff, but I know this better. And I could intimately say, hey, these are the ins and the outs, and this is where you're going to fit in, where, you know, the search firm has, you know, they've had 30 minutes with me or so and met with, you know, some people on the executive team and they're not living it, you know, so there is value there, but I know in some areas I can do it better. That might sound a little egotistical.
No, I mean, it makes sense, right? Because you're actually embedded in the business. You know what's coming up ahead. You live and breathe the culture. Yeah. And so you're able to like explain the day-to-day, whereas someone that's not as connected, someone that's external, they have to like think like, oh gosh, like it's this company. Like what's unique about them again? Or like what benefits do they have? Or they might have to check with someone, right?
Right. And I've got some real skin in the game for this to go well. And so that's important to me. You know, I want to be part of the build and I want to be part of the selection process and, you know, who's going to be the right fit for us for the long term.
Right. And I mean, to sum it up, it also sounds like no matter if you work with a in-house recruiter or a external, you know, recruiting agency, they're both incentivized by getting your butt in the seat, right? So they're not really incentivized to, you know, like lead you along or like, you know, drag out the time or even kind of lowball your offer, right? Because they want to get your butt in the seat. They want you to sign the offer ASAP.
Yeah, but like. I also want the person to stay. You know what I mean? Yes. So like to get the, you know, butt in seat ASAP and then they leave in 3 months, that does me
doesn't
no
do good. Any good.
Yeah. No, and I'm doing this again, you know, and again, I'm pretty transparent. What you see is what you get. And I want to make sure that they know, hey, this is what you're getting into. I'm going to tell you the good. I'm real passionate about the good because, again, I can feel it. I live it. I breathe it. But there is some stuff that, you know, isn't so great. And like, you're going to find that in any environment. But let's talk about that, you know, and say, hey, what works for you? Like the other day, I had this candidate and then I got a time to get him scheduled to do something. And my gut reaction was to write back being like, no can do. It's like 9 p.m. his time. And then I was like, you know what? Not fair of me. So I went to him and I said, hey, this is your decision, not mine. And he was like, no, actually that works great. Let's lock it in, you know? And I was
wow.
Glad I asked. Cause I was like, well, that's a pretty poor candidate experience. And again, there's certain things that I just want to make sure that I'm being very upfront about. No lowballing that doesn't do us any good either. And they go get a $30,000 pay increase and I'm back at square one. Churning bodies doesn't make a successful company, you know? So again, there's definitely some skin in the game there for it to work out. And I don't expect lifers. I don't expect people to be in the same job for 12 years like me, but you know, a couple of years where you feel like you've left a great footprint and moving on, then that's a really good success story.
No, I appreciate that insight and kind of the walkthrough in terms of your career arc. And it's like almost kind of like a jungle gym, right? Where it doesn't have to necessarily, you don't necessarily have to feel pressure to kind of follow a straight, like, you know, linear line and say like, I need to, you know, be this level in like 2 years or anything like that, but really trying to figure out like, what can I learn? What is best for me and kind of my life stage right now?
Right.
And you know, what's out there?
Totally. Like again, am I treated right? Do I treat people right? Do people want to work with me and for me and vice versa? And again, does it fit into my lifestyle? And I'm willing to hustle. I'm willing to put in long hours. And like here, it's nice because my Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday gets a little wonky, you know, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. It's different. But then Thursday, it's like, and then Friday is a dream because it's Saturday there. And you're like, I can catch up and I can do all the things. And again, it's a little non-traditional, but it makes it work for me.
Gosh, I love this advice and those like sneak peeks into kind of working globally. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Donna.
Yeah.
Thanks, Donna.
Thank you.
That's it for The Blind Ambition. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.